From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Next week marks 100 years since the birth of Idaho Senator Frank Church. Church, who was a Democrat, served as a U.S. Senator from Idaho from 1957 until 1981. He is currently the last Democrat to do so, and he was also the longest-serving Democratic senator from our state and the only Democrat from Idaho who served more than two terms in the Senate. Church served on the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, and in 1960, he gained national exposure when he gave the keynote speech at the Democratic National Convention. He was also considered a strong progressive as well as an environmental legislator, where he played a major role in creating a system of protected wilderness areas. So joining us today to talk more about his life and his legacy, as well as upcoming celebrations, are Frank Church Institute board member Rod Grammer. Grammer also co-authored Senator Church's biography, Fighting the Odds, and Monica Church, Frank Church's granddaughter and executive director of the Frank Church Institute. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Good morning, Gemma.
Good morning, Gemma.
So, Monica, let me start with you. For a lot of folks who may not be familiar with Frank Church, let's go back to the very beginning. Give us a little bit of background, because your grandfather was born in Boise.
Well, Gemma, I would argue that Rod probably has a little better understanding of the the history of the Church family than maybe even I do. But yeah, it's one of those things that I am very proud to say that on both sides of my family, we can trace our roots back in Idaho generations. And as far as the, the Frank Church legacy, not only was, his father born in Idaho, but his grandfather had come through even before Idaho was a state. And he was very proudly born in Idaho. And when my daughter graduates from Boise High, she'll be able to stand up and say that she's a fifth generation Boise High graduate as well as an Idahoan. Wow. Long roots in Idaho, in many different parts of Idaho, both him and Bethine, who was born, of course, in Mackay, and her family came from that area.
Yeah. So, Rod, you actually were a reporter who covered Senator Church. Can you first talk to us about that experience, but also adding on to what Monica said, just about who Frank Church was?
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. Frank Church was an extraordinary person and politician, for that matter, and statesman, I would argue. He was one of the most brilliant people I've ever known. He was sort of a rock star from an early age. He won the student body president at Boise High School. He won a national oratory contest that the American Legion sponsored, which gave him essentially a full ride scholarship to the college of his choice when he graduated from high school. But he started school, but then joined the Army, and he served in Army intelligence during World War II. He served in the Pacific region as an intelligence officer in Burma and spent some time in China as well. He was elected to the U.S. Senate at the very young age of 32. In fact, he was wow. so young looking that he was often misidentified as a elevator operator in the state Senate, in the state capitol. But he rose regularly in the Senate. He, as you mentioned, he keynoted the keynote address at John Kennedy's convention in L.A. Mm-hmm. in 1960. But he, I know I'm biased, but both as a reporter and as his biographer, I would argue that he's probably the greatest political figure ever to come out of Idaho.
What was it about him, Rod, that made him so interesting to you as a reporter? Let's start there, because a lot of times you cover political figures and you can sometimes see right their greatness. Other times maybe their foibles.
Well, I came into covering Church late in his career, which also dates me, but I covered him from the mid-70s, and I spent a year and a half covering his last campaign for a fifth term in 1980, which he lost by less than 1% of the vote. But he was he was already not just a national figure when I started covering him, but he was an international figure. His mm-hmm. reputation was throughout the world as one of the leading foreign affairs experts in the United States. He was only the second Idahoan to run for president of the United States in 1976. The other, of course, was William Borah. And by the time I covered him, he was chair of the Foreign Relations Committee. He had helped stop the Vietnam War. He had run for president. And yet, in his final years, he made an incredible, always had made an incredible impact on Idaho and the nation and the world. But in his final years, one of the things I admired so much about Church was his courage. He was a progressive in a very conservative state, a Democrat in a Republican state, but he was never afraid to use his political capital to further the interests of Idaho mm-hmm. and to further the interests of the United States at home and across the globe. And for example, in the last few years of his service in the Senate, he did two really historic things. First of all, he passed the River No Return Wilderness in 1980, which is the second largest wilderness in the lower 48 states. It is now known as the River of Frank Church River No Return. And for a lot of young people who don't know anything about Frank Church, they simply call it the Frank, knowing why. The other thing he did in the last few years of his tenure, which really, I think, contributed to his defeat in 1980, was he sponsored the passage of the Panama Canal treaties, which were very unpopular in Idaho. Mm-hmm. But it was very important because those treaties that returned the canal to Panama have really kept commerce and even cruise ships going through that canal in a peaceful, safe manner for the last 50 years, and really mm-hmm. Avoided a war in the Panama Canal Zone. But his imprint on Idaho and the nation is so large, really.
And in a moment, Rod, I really want to dig more into some of those things that you just talked about. But one of the things you mentioned was he was a Democrat in a red state, even then. And when I think we look at today's culture and climate, Rod, it is kind of mind-boggling to think that a Democrat could not just be elected to the U.S. Senate from Idaho, but then he served for 24 years in that position. What was it about Church that made him so widely popular? Really, some could argue on both sides of the aisle, because you can't stay in office that long in a red state as a Democrat unless there is that bipartisan support.
Well, absolutely. I've always said that Frank Church and Cecil Andrus, which is Monica's other grandfather, could have never been elected in Idaho without Republican support. Church had widespread Republican support. And I think there were two things that really kept him in office. The first is he had the best constituent services, perhaps in the history of Idaho. He really put a premium on serving rank and file Idahoans. If they had a Social Security problem, if they had a problem with any government agency, he was right there. He had a policy in his office that every letter from a constituent or a phone call from a constituent had to be returned within 24 hours. Even if they didn't have the answer for that constituent's problem, they would communicate with that constituent right away. He came back to the state regularly. He held town hall meetings in all 44 counties every year. So he really mingled with the people of Idaho and really served the people of Idaho. The other thing I think that kept him in office was his courage and his independence. He would come home, and even if the constituents disagreed with his position, he would listen to them. He would try to explain why he did things. And I think my experience in covering Idaho politics now for a long, long time is that the people of Idaho respect elected officials who speak their mind and take a position. Even if they disagree with that political leader, they admire people that stand for something. And Church always stood for something. And so I think his independence, his courage to take on the tough issues, and his constituent services really kept him in office all those years.
Pam, I mean, sorry, Monica, what is it like for you and your family to have this legacy, not just of Frank Church, but of your other grandfather, Cecil Andrus? Because as Rod said, these are two Democratic figures in the state of Idaho that crossed party lines and were, I think in some ways, you could argue, really examples of how to lead, no matter what letter is behind your name.
Yeah, Gemma, you know, thank you for that question. And I have to say that while I always appreciate that question, I just remind anyone that these are, you know, my grandparents. And so while we sat around the dinner table, we didn't often talk about government accountability, but as you know, instead about birthdays and you know, the things that families do. But with that in mind, of course, it has always been a huge part of our family to consider, you know, Idaho, to consider Idaho first, to consider policies, you know, that make this state the best state to live in. And we had those conversations, you know, often and widely. And I do want to add to what Rod was saying about why Frank Church specifically was so popular. In the Frank Church Institute has been working to catalog a lot of the speeches that Frank Church gave over the course of many, many years. And one of the things that has come out is that the courage and independence that Rod talked about was Frank Church's ability to change his mind and to express that openly and with an authentic voice to his constituents you know, to his colleagues in the Senate and in the government more broadly. And I think that too is something that may be missing in, you know, current or even recent past politics, is having an authentic individual who will openly admit that they have been presented with new information or over the course of a lifetime have come to see something in a different light. And that, you know, I think those are the kind of values that, you know, we were raised with, and those that the people of Idaho saw in Frank Church that ultimately kept him in office so long.
And Rod, as you mentioned, the accomplishments of Senator Church are frankly, I mean, too many to count. We could talk for more than an hour about that. But I do want to highlight some of his crucial work that you mentioned, and this is his environmental work. And you mentioned the Frank Church Wilderness. I do not think it's an understatement to say that if you recreate at all in the wilderness, you have Frank Church to thank for that.
Absolutely, Jim. I've always said that if you stand at the top of Galena Summit and you look at the Sawtooth Valley and you look across those beautiful sawtooths, you have to thank Frank Church. If you float the Salmon River, the Middle Fork of the Salmon River, you've got to thank Frank Church because he protected that river from being dammed when they actually wanted to dam that river. If you've hiked in the Gospel Hump Wilderness or the Selkirk Wilderness or any of the wilderness areas, except for the few that have been created since he was defeated, you've got to thank Frank Church. And for that matter, he sponsored the Wilderness Act. He sponsored the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. So any place in this country where you go into a wilderness area or you float a free-flowing river, anywhere in the United States, you've got to thank Frank Church. I mean, his fingerprints are all over Idaho, all over the nation when it comes to the environment. I think he was one of the leading environmental figures of the 20th century. And still has not received his due, in my opinion, for his incredible record when it comes to protecting the environment and the beautiful places in our state, our country.
And Rod, with that said, I mean, that is such a legacy, right? Because it does expand to any place in the United States where you recreate in the wilderness. any as you said, you float a free flowing river. You have Frank Church to thank for that. With that said, I mean, he was so before his time when it comes to environmental issues. What was it in your research about him that do you think made him such an advocate for this? Because I think for folks sometimes who aren't from the West, you don't necessarily always understand the vastness of the outdoors and how majestic it is. And it is truly something to behold.
Yeah. You know, Frank Church, when he was asked to sponsor the Wilderness Act in 1964, it was incredibly unpopular in Idaho. We are an extraction state historically. Bethine, his wife, his father-in-law, Chase Clark, who had been governor of Idaho, both advised him, don't touch this with a 10-foot pole. Mm. It will cost you your Senate seat. But Frank, like so many examples in his career, Church did sponsor the Wilderness Act because he really believed in protecting the special places in Idaho and across the country. I think in many ways, Church was born, raised here in Idaho. Like those of us, like myself, who were also born and raised in Boise. And we were very aware growing up, and I think Church was, of the what we used to call the Idaho primitive area, which has now been turned much into the wilderness areas. And I think he came to, I think, the environment because he knew that Idaho would grow and that people would need a place to go out and touch nature. And he had, I hate to say the word, but maybe I will, kind of a spiritual relationship with the outdoors. There's a famous quote, which is actually on his gravestone in Morris Hill Cemetery, about, a person can't camp under the stars in Idaho and be, self-absorbed. And I think he said, make some time in your life to go out into nature, into the wilderness, and be touched by the Spirit of God. It's in that quote. He said it much more eloquently than I just did. But I think he just had a love for any of us who are from Idaho. The mountains and the wilderness areas, the special places, are in our DNA. It's in our DNA. And I think it was in Frank Church's DNA as well.
Ron, I want to turn now and talk a little bit more about his political career. And I want to begin with the fact that, as both of us have mentioned, he not only was the keynote speaker at the 1960 Democratic National Convention, which, as we all know, that is a big deal. There are the likes of Barack Obama, who was the keynote speaker and became the president. This is a big, huge national stage when you take that position as the keynote speaker. And as you said, he ran for president in 1976, and he won a number of state primaries. Talk to us about this part of his political journey, where my understanding too, Rod, is that he was kind of in contention for that vice presidential position with Jimmy Carter getting the nod for president.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in 1960, he was very close to John Kennedy. John Kennedy was about 7 years older than Church, but he was very close to John Kennedy. He was very close to Robert Kennedy and Teddy Kennedy, and he was just an outstanding speaker, and I think that's why he was tapped in 1960. Church, throughout his career, had often been asked to run for president. He was asked in 1968 to run for president. He was running for re-election here in Idaho, and he decided not to. In 1972, George McGovern, who he was very close to, asked him to run for vice president on the ticket. And Church laughed. He said, you're from South Dakota, I'm from Idaho, and I'm not really sure that two guys from sparsely populated states should be on the ticket. But anyway, but Church, some people might think he always harbored these presidential ambitions. I don't think so. I think his greatest ambition for most of his career was to serve as chair of the Foreign Relations Committee. But I think he looked around, and by 1975, 1976, he thought, well, look, I'm as qualified as anybody else running. And had it not been for getting into the race so late in 1976, I think he stood a really great chance of winning the nomination, because the progressive wing of the Democratic Party was not crazy about Jimmy Carter. But the problem was that he got into the race very late. He won more states against Carter than any other candidate did. He had what he called the California strategy. His plan, he knew he got into the state late or in the race late, but he thought if he could win California, they might go to the convention and the progressive wing might choose him to be the nominee. The problem was that with the California strategy is that at the very last minute, Governor Jerry Brown got into the race as a favorite son, which made it almost impossible for Church to win the California primary. But had Brown not gotten in, it was almost a sure bet that Church would have won California. He had a great organization there. He was very, very popular in California. I'm convinced that he would have won the California primary. Then he would have gone to the convention with a lot of delegates. Could he unseat Carter? I don't know. But he would have gone to the convention with a lot of delegates. As it turned out, he was one of the few considered by Jimmy Carter to run as vice president. But a lot of people, I don't think Carter and Church never had a love affair. Let's put it that way. I don't think they really were kind of oil and water, really. And a lot of people advised Carter not to pick Church because Church was a very independent person. He spoke his mind. He had his own mind. Mm-hmm. And frankly, they actually told Carter, you know, Mondale would be a better vice president because he had always been in Hubert Humphrey's shadow. So he would never really compete with Carter. So that's one of the reasons Carter picked Mondale. But I actually think that Church would have been very unhappy as vice president. I think he, if things had turned out differently, I think in 1976, Church would have had a heck of a shot at the presidency.
That's really incredible to think about. With that said, Rod, talk to us about the Church Committee. What was this and the significance of this committee?
Well, some people think, Gemma, now that it's probably the most important committee investigation in Senate history, and I even more than the Watergate investigation. I'd probably agree with that assessment. We have to remember back in the 60s, 70s, the FBI and the CIA had been doing a lot of pretty bad things, not both domestically and internationally. The CIA had attempted to kill foreign leaders. It was in cahoots with the folks that were usurping power, like in Chile and places like that. And one of the things Frank Church really was concerned about throughout his career was civil rights, in terms of the government not eavesdropping on American citizens or unduly violating their constitutional rights. And when these things started being uncovered a little bit by the media, especially Cy Hirsch of the New York Times, this Church Committee, which has become known as the Church Committee, was formed. And Frank Church, for 2 years, dug into these abuses by the FBI and the CIA. And for the first time in American history, really provided oversight into these things. And so protections, because of that investigation, protections were placed in place where the CIA and the FBI could not abuse their power. And really, from a civil rights, First Amendment, constitutional point of view, we owe Church a huge debt of gratitude for reining in these could have been continuing abuses by these governmental agencies.
Monica, as we just talked about, I mean, there we've just touched the surface, I think, of your grandfather's life, his legacy, his career. And this is kind of where the Frank Church Institute comes in. Your annual gala is coming up next week. And every year you honor someone with the Frank and Bethany Church Award for Public Service. Before you tell us about that, can you talk to us just quickly about the Frank Church Institute itself for folks who may not be familiar?
Sure. Thanks, Gemma. So the Frank Church Institute sits within the School of Public Service at Boise State University. It was first founded by Bethany Church in 1982 as the Frank and Bethany Church Endowed Chair. And the goal of the Frank Church Institute has been and continues to be to provide the community and students of Boise State an opportunity to engage in dialogues about issues that were very front and center to Frank Church's life, but are also, of course, front and center in our lives currently. So we really focus on democracy, the environment, leadership, and a call for civic engagement and an understanding of public policy, both domestic and foreign. And so there's a long list of people who have helped to kind of really build the Frank Church Institute. But where it stands today, it is fully integrated into the scholarship and the advancement of experiential learning for students, and really works to provide opportunities for not only Boise State students, but Idaho students all across the state to have experiences like Frank Church did. We just helped send a bunch of students to Washington, D.C. as part of the Capital Connections program. And, one of our Frank Church scholars was able to intern in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And so these are the kind of opportunities that the Frank Church Institute provides as part of its educational mission. On top of that, the Frank Church Institute holds a lot of conferences and private small group meetings to help community members, businesses, legislators, and others understand some of the key issues that surround those big mission values of democracy, leadership, and education, and foreign and domestic policy. And so the Institute, as Rod and others likely say, punches well, above its weight. But doing really great things to provide opportunities for students in the community to not only understand the legacy of Frank Church and Bethany Church, but also just to have an opportunity to discuss some of these topics that were so front and center, of course, during his time in office, but are still front and center today. So that's kind of the Institute in a nutshell. We do host, as you said, an awards gala typically every year. And then, of course, the annual Frank Church Conference for all of our community members.
Mm-hmm. And Monica, before we wrap up, I also want to talk about this really special exhibit that the Idaho Historical Society has been working on to remember Frank Church at 100 years old. So this will be a traveling exhibit, correct?
Yeah, so thank you for asking about that. This has been a real labor of love the last couple of years to get this to fruition. And I have to say that the Idaho State Museum as our partner, and of course the Albertsons Library Special Collections have really been fundamental in making this happen. And so there's actually a multitude of exhibits. So the one you're referring to, there are two traveling exhibits that have been made and will, starting later this summer, early fall, start their kind of zigzag across the state. They will be sent to community centers, city halls, libraries from Sandpoint down to Rexburg and everywhere in between, and will be available for people to see and learn about Frank Church's legacy, about all the things that you've been talking to Rod about legislatively, environmentally, and with the church committee, of course. And they will go across the state through the end of the year, and then they will be available for people to rent free of charge, that we will send to them for a multitude of different reasons. There will also be an exhibit at the museum, a stable exhibit that will be in the basement area of the exhibit center at the Idaho State Museum, that will display Frank Church's Senate desk. You know, you think about if you've ever been to a, you know, presidential library where they kind of recreate the president's office, the Oval Office. So on a, you know, smaller scale, there's kind of a recreation of the Senate office of Senator Frank Church with mementos and, of course, all of those same learning opportunities.
And Monica, we should note that the gala with the award for the Frank and Bethany Church Award for Public Service is next week.
Yes. Yeah, we are so excited. Next week, we will host the Frank Church Institute Gala and Award for Public Service, honoring one of Idaho's other, you know, great public servants and philanthropists, Gregory Carr. And this event is a really important event for the Institute, but I also think for the community. Not only do we get to hear this year from a great human rights advocate and Idaho native, but we also get together and are able to share the value of the Institute as it pertains to students and student engagement and raise money for those scholarships. The Frank Church Institute in this last school year was able to provide over $50,000 in scholarships, as well as we host and take over the expense for the Idaho's only statewide high school Model UN program. And so this is an opportunity for us to share those great accomplishments and to ask our community members to, you know, help us do it again. And of course, celebrate Gregory Carr, who is well deserving of this award.
Well, I want to thank both of you for taking time today to talk with us about this. Just really such a fascinating conversation. So thank you both for your time.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you, Gemma.
We've been talking with Frank Church Institute board member Rod Grammer. Grammer also co-authored Senator Church's biography, Fighting the Odds, and Monica Church, executive director of the Frank Church Institute, as we get set to recognize 100 years since the birth of the late Idaho senator. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.